Hugh Hammond has been part of a contingent in Germany to retrieve skeletal remains of Karapuna, Moriori ancestors of the Chatham Islands, or Rekohu, and Maori Tipuna. The remains have been retrieved from various institutions and museums, and since June 1st, indeed, there have been 7 ceremonies in 6 locations around Germany. And these ancestors had been dug up by colonizers for science or to be traded as curiosities. A leader in the revival of the Moriori language and customs, as well as Te Reo Māori, Hammond learnt of his Moriori roots only 25 years ago. He was in a hotel room in Frankfurt when we spoke about what he's been doing there.
So for the past 10 days, my wife and I, Hinarangi Edwards, we have been part of a contingent from Te Papa and a kaupapa called Karanga Aotearoa, who have been here in Germany to retrieve several tipuna, tipuna Māori, and karapuna Moriori from various institutions, universities, and museums in different parts of Germany. There have been 7 ceremonies that have been held in 6 locations, and we just finished the last of those today in Wiesbaden.
So where are the karapuna or tipuna now?
Well, they're in a safe, secure place, waiting to be transported back to Aotearoa, New Zealand. And they'll arrive back properly early next week in time for the repatriation ceremony that will take place at Te Papa, Wellington, on the 14th.
As I understand it, this is the second tranche of the karapuna or tipuna who are being repatriated. The first tranche was from the UK, and these ones are being collected from various German institutions. Is that right?
Yes, that is correct. So last year, as you said, Kim, we had a large number of karapuna who were repatriated from the United Kingdom, from the British Natural History Museum. Probably the largest number of karapuna have been in the UK, but also a significant number here in Germany. And so altogether, Māori, tipuna Māori, as well as karapuna, we're talking about over 100 individuals.
How did they all get over there? I mean, it was all illegal, wasn't it?
Well, they got here by a number of means. In terms of the legalities of it, in, I think it was 1830s, the governor of New Zealand at the time, as I understand it, basically passed a decree that the trade of human anatomy, especially Māori heads, was to cease. But it was something that continued on anyway, because you have people who were collectors. You also have people who profited from it and treated it as a commercial trade. And so the karapuna and the tipuna who arrived here in Germany, as in other parts of the world, they got here by various means, obviously by boat, but the pathways by which they got here were quite varied. So some were traded in New Zealand, and retraded again in places such as in Indonesia and elsewhere. So, yeah, they came by many different pathways. The really important thing has been for the team at Te Papa to try and establish the provenance, the origins of these different tipuna, these different karapuna. And in some instances, it was simply a note that said maybe Moriori or Māori or something that had been scrawled on the fragment of bone, or even on the on the tipuna itself, to denote its general place of origin. But in some cases, we don't know exactly. At least with the karapuna Moriori, we know that they're from Rekohu, However, in regards to tipuna Māori, some are known because of the historical record that was kept by those who brought them here. But in many cases, we actually don't know yet.
Did the people who collected these body parts always know whether they were Māori or Māori?
I think those who actually came to Aotearoa and those who came to Rekohu, they knew what they were. And they had different motivations. For some, it was in the pursuit of science, and the research that was happening at that time was race-based research, trying to establish the hierarchy of humanity. And for others, it was purely as curiosities, or for things that, or they collected them, or basically stole them from where they were buried, for the express purpose of selling them to those people who did want to use them for research, to sell them to museums, to sell them to collectors.
And as you say, you can't be sure of the whakapapa of any of these, can you?
Well, it kind of depends on how much of a record was kept. One of the issues here in Germany was that during World War II, while, and I hate to use the word collections, collections of these tipuna and karapuna were for the most part stored away and kept safe, at least as far as those that we know of. But what happened too is that in many cases, the records were destroyed in the bombing. And destroyed as a result of World War II. So, in some cases, there are fragments of information that point us in a certain direction. An example is we were in Hildesheim just a few days ago to collect the tipuna who it was recorded had been taken from Paikākariki, the Kapiti Coast, which is actually where I grew up. As a kid, even though I'm not from that particular area, it has been my privilege and my honour to have been raised by the people Ngāti Toa Rangatira, Ngāti Haumia Whakatere, and Te Atiawa Ki Whakarongotai and Ngāti Raukawa. So there is a connection to that whenua. So yeah, that's an example. But as I said before, when it comes to our karapuna Moriori, we know that they are from Rekohu. It is hard to determine exactly where in Rekohu they were taken from. But the great thing about that island and also its outlying islands such as Rangihaute is that we are able to know with more certainty that they came from that place. And so where it's been recorded that they were Moriori, and that was quite often the case. In fact, a large number of those that we are bringing back this time are Moriori. So, yeah, it's a mixed bag, Kim, in terms of knowing exactly where these tipuna and where these karapuna came from. But this where karapuna Moriori, we have a definite location in terms of Rekohu. For our tipuna Māori, yeah, it's quite varied. So there's more of a connection has been established through research done by the team at Te Papa in terms of determining the provenance of these individuals, of these karapuna, of these tipuna. But in the case of tipuna Māori, sometimes it's a bit difficult to be able to know for certain now. However, more research is being done. In fact, we've just today been at Wiesbaden to retrieve a tipuna from there, a Toimoko in particular. And as part of a collection of a wider collection of ancestors from other parts of the world, in particular Indonesia. And they're about to embark, Wiesbaden Museum are about to embark on some further research to try and determine the provenance of those ancestors from Indonesia. And they're actually hoping that in the process of doing that, they might be able to uncover some information that will help our team at Te Papa better determine where this Toimoko, where this tipuna Māori came from.
So there's a lot of detective work involved. Tell me, I mean, it seems unseemly to ask, But are there any complete skeletons? Are they mostly heads? What are they?
Well, sometimes they're just fragments. Sometimes they're parts of the jaw bones, they're parts of skulls, there may be a complete skull. On some occasions, it could be a complete skeleton. And what we do know is that for those individuals who came to our shores and undertook to basically loot the urupa and loot the graves of our ancestors, in many cases, they were trying to look for a complete skeleton. And in some instances, they were able to do that, put together a complete skeleton or find all the parts of one wherever they were looking. However, it's recorded in various documentation. And these people who did this, quite a few of them were in the practice of giving quite detailed descriptions of the work that they did. And also the fact that they often did it in under the cover of darkness. They did it in a hidden fashion. They did it away from the eyes of local tangata whenua because they knew that it was something that was tapu. They knew that it was something that wasn't agreed to. Yeah, so that's probably the best answer to your question there, Kim. And it does sound quite macabre, but these were things that these human beings were doing. Yeah, in regards to human remains. So you've got to wonder, wow, what was their standard of ethics and what was their standard of integrity at the time?
All these things were not, I take it, on display. They would have been in the vaults of all these institutions.
Well, in some instances, they were on display, depending on what it was. I guess depending on the display value, the presentation value of what it was. And though they may not have been on display in more recent times, it is quite probable that some would have been out there for the public to look at as a curiosity, as an oddity, a symbol of, say, an extinct race or what was thought to be an extinct race like Moriori. But there were quite a few that were simply in storage, or they were parts of collections that were being used for quote unquote scientific study. And the scientific study that was being undertaken at that times in colonial times was race-based research, race-based science, whereby they were analyzing the all sorts of aspects of these bones of these koiwi and the koiwi, basically as a means to try and establish what they thought was a human hierarchy.
I'm assuming that the Karapuna, the Moriori remains, were taken after what's been described as a genocide, after the arrival of Ngāti Mutunga and Ngāti Tama. And that was in 1835, would that be right?
For the most part, that would seem to be the case. There is actually documentation recorded narratives from people of the time, basically talking about their activities and going into the sand hills and looking for fragments of bone, and even trading with local settlers and others who were there. So, yeah, it was something that happened mostly after the fact.
You obviously regard Moriori as very different from Maori, with their own language, which you speak, and with their own culture, their own history. Is that how you want to further the cultural understanding of the Moriori?
Well, speaking as someone who is Moriori, I am also Maori and I'm also European. And each has different ways of thinking, but even then, the thinking as a Pākehā, as Maori, as Moriori can also be quite diverse and varied. One of the really important things about this repatriation work is, in addition to bringing our karapuna home, is to be able to utilize our old kariki, our chants, our incantations, our affirmations of purpose, our rongo, those being our songs, and tare moriori as a means to bring them back, as well as to help develop our own people, ta'imi moriori, in regards to the tikanga, the customs, the protocols, the practices, but also through that, being able to strengthen Māori identity and the utilization of tāre Māori.
So the Māori language is no longer spoken as a native language by anyone. I mean, I think the last speaker of the native reo died out decades ago. What are the chances of you reviving that?
Well, I think the chances are as strong as the commitment and dedication we put toward it. There are examples of other communities around the world where their language has been regarded as extinct because it's no longer verbalized. It may be in some written form or maybe through fragments of memory, but it has been possible to bring those languages alive again. And through those, as I said before, through those charts, through those genealogies and so forth, as a basis upon which to be able to do so. Not so long ago in the 1980s, and definitely in the 1970s, Te Reo Māori was seen as a dying language. And here we are in 2023, and the language hasn't died. And it hasn't died because Te Reo Māori had people who believed in its value and in terms of identity, in terms of communication, in terms of modes of thinking as well. And the same thing applies to Moriori, except for Moriori, we have a lower population number. So that has its pros and cons because some people say, well, you have a smaller population base, doesn't that make it harder? Well, it could do. But once again, when you have a dedicated group of people who are committed to bringing the language alive again, and I have to qualify this by saying, we have to base it on faith. Now, I know some people will be out there and they'll absolutely disagree with this. And my response to that is, I don't care what they think. But we have to take it on faith that what was left to us was recorded faithfully in terms of tāre Māori that was written down, in terms of the descriptions of those who heard tāre Māori being used, of how it sounded. And then the other thing that we do is that we listen to the environment. We listen to the land itself, the elements around e kohu, because that tells us a lot around what our language might have sounded like. Because the reality is that language evolves anyway. Te Reo Māori, the Māori language that we speak now, is not the language that our tipuna was speaking 200 years ago. And I think that is very much the case with English, with German, with many other languages around the world. Languages evolve. With tāre Māori, well, it's not so much a case of language evolution, but it's a case of we have an opportunity based on what we have to be able to start anew because we can never go back to be what those karāpuna were 200 years ago. They were different to us, the way that they lived, and of course, how they spoke. But I think that's the case for all of us, regardless of our languages and our cultures.
Tell me about your own Māori heritage. How far back can you go in terms of your Māori side?
Be honest, not far, because with the dislocation of Māori from our land and from our language and our culture, in addition to those who never left the island, and I'm talking about those who died there. There were also many who were taken, and they were taken away from Rīkoru, and they were taken to various parts of Aotearoa New Zealand, and even various parts of the world, we can probably guess. And so, for my hūnau in particular, we are regarded as the lost voices. We are the descendants of those who were taken away, and what we managed to retain within our own family narrative, historical narrative, was a memory of what had happened. And we're quite fortunate that one of our elders, who retained that memory before she passed away, was able to share it with us. And so we, once again, we have to base it on faith. Some people say, well, you need to prove that you're Māori. Well, once again, that's an opinion, and everyone has one. As far as we're concerned, we are here to revive, to bring alive again tāre Māori and its tikanga, its customs, its protocols, the culture, and We are here to serve Taimi Moriori. We are here to do whatever is required to ensure that Moriori language, culture, customs, history, hokopapa, that is genealogy, that is not just retained and maintained, but that it will beyond survive, that it will thrive in years to come and in generations to come.
I'm speaking to Kiwa Hammond, who identifies as Moriori and Maori and European. He's involved in the repatriation of the Tipuna or Karapuna from German institutions at the moment. As we know, history matters. So when you think about what was perpetrated on Moriori by Ngāti Mutunga and Ngāti Tama, how do you figure that into your history?
I see it this way, Kim. It happened. These things happened. There's so many things. There's a difference between history and past. In the past, things happened. And there are some things that are actually indisputable facts. They happened. History, however, is a perspective of the past. So there are those who believe that in terms of, or their version of history, of what happened with the Rekohu, that it wasn't so bad, that it didn't really happen. Well, we've heard those kinds of comments said before in the context of other cultures and other peoples.
I mean, Maui Solomon talks about justice needing to be done. Can justice be done?
I don't want to get into a conversation about justice. The really important thing is that as far as this mahi is concerned, the repatriation, is that we're bringing them home. We're bringing them home, we're reconnecting them to a place from which they were taken by whomever is now beside the point. The important thing is we are bringing them home. And that's the real story at the moment. It's not about trying to seek some kind of justice for those things that did happen. For me, it's actually about they should never have been taken in the first place, regardless by whom. So let's get them home and let's get them back to where they belong and where they came from.
There'll be a ceremony at Te Papa welcoming them home. And then what?
Oh, correct. So next week, after we return from Germany, there will be a ceremony at Te Papa. And it's going to involve a number of iwi groups. In addition to Moriori, there are going to be other iwi who are there because this repatriation is the largest repatriation to have happened in the past couple of years, even though we had some pretty big ones last year. Because of COVID, there were huge delays in being able to complete repatriations over the past few years. So this is quite a big one. As I said, it's over 100 individuals who are being brought back. And they whakapapa to various iwi around the country. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be up to each iwi and also Taimi Moriori to determine how, from the time that these karapuna and tipuna arrive in Pōneke in Wellington and will be in the safe care of Te Papa for a time, it's actually going to be over to us as Taimi Moriori and also to iwi to determine what next. Where should they go? For some iwi, they have chosen to rebury. For some, they are still going through a process of working out how best to serve their tipuna. And it's a similar case with Moriori. There's some big conversations that are still needing to happen and have begun already around what's going to be next. So right now, we don't have an answer to the question, you know, what happens after Te Papa of the ceremony next week. All we know is that they're going to at least make it as far as Wellington, as far as Te Whanganui Ātau, and then there'll be a case of working out what is next.
There has been talk of a memorial site on Rekohu, Chatham Island, to house these remains. Do you think that that's a likely outcome?
Oh, look, like I said, there's still some big conversations happening. It is a distinct possibility, but I'm not in a position to say for sure exactly what's going to happen.
It must be an extraordinarily moving process for you.
It is. It is in the respect that, you know, some of these karapuna that we're bringing back were children. And so we look at it in the context, as we've had some really interesting conversations with our colleagues over here in Germany. And the discussion has drifted away from the importance of scientific research to discussions around humanity. What does humanity look like in science? And how do we honor humanity in science? And the conversations that we've had have been, well, reminding ourselves and reminding each other that this is not just a fragment of bone to be put under a microscope or to be DNA tested or anything like that. This was somebody's child. This was somebody's father, mother, baby. And so when we put it into that context, it becomes very real. And the emotion that comes out is also very real. So, in terms of what we do, our role, and I have to acknowledge others who were part of the delegation, had to go back to Aotearoa a bit earlier, in particular, Pauni Gloin and Huia Kopa, and also from Hokitihi Moriori Trust, Chas Taurima, Christine Harvey, and of course, the team, the delegation that we've been working with, Te Here Kia Kia, Herewini, Te Ariki Rangi, Mamaku Ironside, and Hine Moana Baker, and also all under the guidance of the Repatriation Advisory Panel, Te Papa, headed by Tāpō Temara. Yeah, this is a very real experience for us. It's not just a case of going through emotions and some type of artificial performance. You know, the what we expressed and the processes that we undertake are very much a real expression of what it is to be Moriori and what it is to be Māori.
Will you have more repatriation trips in the future?
That's a really good question. Quite a bit of repatriation work has been done over the years. By the time we arrive back in Aotearoa with these particular karapuna and tipuna, over 900 individuals would have been repatriated back to Aotearoa. And that's over many years. Indications are that there are some more tipuna, there are some more karapuna in other institutions throughout Europe and elsewhere. So there will likely be more repatriation, as been communicated to me by Te Here Kia Kia, Herewini, who heads the program for Te Papa. But the scale may be different. This was exceptional because, as I said, COVID prevented these activities from happening over the past few years. So this has been an exceptional repatriation process done over, well, shucks, over 20 days.
Ngā mihi kiwa. You'll be glad to come home.
I'm looking forward to my bed.